Please call the case.
Case number SCAP-15-582, Stout versus Board of Trustees of the Employees Retirement System. Arguing for the petitioner, John C. McLaren. Arguing for respondent, Brian P. Aberano. Argument on the merits.
All right. Good morning, Mr. McLaren and Mr. Aberano. Are you both ready to proceed today? All right. We'll... You've reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal, Mr. McLaren. We'll give you a warning light at that point in your argument. Mr. Aberano will also give you a warning with 5 minutes to go. Mr. McLaren, please proceed.
May it please the court. Thank you very much for accepting this application for transfer. Excuse my voice, I'm fighting a cold.
Do you need some water? Or?
I got some, but I...
All right. If you, at any point you need some, just reach over. That's fine. We can give you a break.
Thank you. It has often been said that the true quality of a civilized society is measured by how well or how poorly it takes care of its most vulnerable citizens. A public school teacher like Rosemary Stout, who was unexpectedly shot by one of her students while she was teaching in class, and who as a result has been unable to continue teaching or perform any gainful work, is one of those most vulnerable citizens. For more than 100 years, Hawaii has had a retirement system which was initially established for public school teachers and principals. The reasons for establishing the retirement system in 1915 are unclear from the available clear legislative history, but it is likely it was a recruiting and retention incentive to offer prospective teachers who were working on the mainland to come to Hawaii to alleviate a public school teacher shortage and to improve the quality of public education particularly in the remote areas of the islands. It was a remedial program in 1915 to address public education teaching challenges in the early 20th century. Public school teachers and principals in Hawaii face vastly different challenges today. However, the remedial social purposes of the retirement system remain unchanged. This court has recognized the obvious in the case Palela versus Rice, 34 Hawaii 150, that the County of Maui service-connected disability retirement system is remedial. There is no doubt that HRS Chapter 88 embodies in its language and its purpose a remedial system of retirement benefits for all state and county employees.
Could I interrupt you there, Mr. McLaren?
Yes.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but while you're on that point, is it your position that any employee of the state is subject to retirement, even if they're not contributing members of the system, the retirement system?
They have to contribute. They have to be members, as the word is used in the statute.
All right. So simply being an employee isn't enough.
No.
Okay. And your client was a contributing member in the sense that when she was a teacher, she was contributing, right?
She was a year-round employee, as currently defined in the statute. Uh-huh. Teachers are paid on a 12-month cycle.
Sure.
And she was back in 1988.
Let me ask it a different way.
I'm sorry, but just to complete the thought, but as a part-time teacher, the substitute, she wasn't contributing, right?
Yes, we acknowledge that as a summer school teacher,
mm-hmm.
according to her pay stubs, from what the available pay stubs we have on the record, it does not indicate. Now, it's very odd to read those stubs because the stubs indicate withdrawals, payments to ERS of $73.31. But according to Mr. Keola, those payments were made from the Radford High School warrant, if that makes sense.
Did your client at the end of every school year get a notice that said, hey, you're no longer a member? And then at the beginning of the school year, it said, hey, you're a member again?
No, not from the records that we subpoenaed back in.
So if you're a member, you're a member.
Well, Justice Pollack, as the court well knows, because all the members of the court are members of ERS, she was a tenured DOE teacher, and was given the usual volume of DOE-related personnel paper every year, civil service things. So among those papers, as far as I can recall, these are not in the record, there was nothing to indicate as of if the school year ended July 31 and the new year began August 1, a notice in late July saying you're not a member, if that's what you're asking.
Go ahead, please.
Go back to the amount of money that was deducted from her pay stubs. That is, it's an indication that it goes to ERS, but it doesn't. Can you explain that?
No, I misspoke. The $73 is an ERS deduction, according to my understanding of the pay stubs and what Mr. Keola was able to state in the admissible part of his declaration. Those payments, according to Mr. Keola, came out of her year-round teacher pay from Radford High School.
So when she got her pay from her summertime job, they made it, even though she was supposed to have been paid out of tuition money, they took part of that to pay for the ERS membership in the regular school year?
It's confusing, and I submitted the available pay stubs that Rosemary had. It's very confusing. It's, I guess, central payroll, how they handle. And she does have one discrete pay stub in the record indicating, according to Mr. Keola, a warrant for a high school. And that was a month or so after she was shot.
I'm sorry. There's a question in the record about whether monies were being taken from her summer school earnings to pay for her regular school year retirement or contributing towards her retirement?
I don't think there's a question between, ERS and myself.
Well, I'm just trying to understand is there a suggestion that she was, in fact, paying into ERS during the summertime period or not?
She was contributing to ERS during the summer from her Radford High School.
From her regular paycheck. So she's a 12-month employee, so she's getting paid for the 12 months throughout the year, and she's contributing to ERS throughout those 12 months. Is that it? Okay.
Yes. Oh, okay. Isn't she actually a 10-month employee? Year-round school employee is any teacher, this is under 8821, any teacher working in a public school or other salaried 10-month Department of Education employee. She's really a 10-month education employee who is being paid over 12 months, right? That's actually how it works, right?
I think so.
I'm just curious, in terms of the 10 months, I noticed that 88-84 subsection C, which relates to the ordinary death benefit, says for the purposes of this section, a year-round school employee shall be considered in service during July and August if the employee was in service for the entire prior school year. So I'm gathering that the 10-month is supposed to be from September through June.
Yep.
That's the 10 months that she's actually considered to be a 10-month employee.
Yes.
And didn't this incident occur on June 30th, 1988?
Yes.
So this was actually within June.
Yes.
If you could address the state's argument, I think if I understand their point, it's that with regard to the summer school job, she was not contributing to retirement from the paycheck she was receiving for the summer school job, and because it was not membership service, I guess is how they would characterize it, it's not covered employment. And they raised the question of, how would we differentiate between, for example, Ms. Stout and an employee who was working at Macy's for the summer, some private employer? How would, and I presume your view is that the Macy's employee or the person working at Macy's wouldn't be covered, and if I'm wrong on that, please correct me, but how is it that you interpret the statute to reach someone who's, although conceitedly a state employee in another context, is not contributing with regard to this particular job first, and then how would you differentiate that employee from such an employee who was just working for a private employer?
Sure. First, answer to your first question, I thought about this quite a bit yesterday. She was contributing. She wasn't contributing in her pay stub. She was a public school teacher. She was teaching summer school at a reduced rate because she loves to teach. She loves to, you know, have children learn. When I grew up here, when I went to summer school, all of my summer school teachers were regular school teachers, DOE and private.
Isn't it in the record that DOE actually tries to hire full-time public school certificated teachers as summer school teachers?
I don't know if it's in this record, but I think it's fairly common knowledge that it's advantageous to all public schools and to our public education system in general to have experienced teachers teach summer school. In my personal experience, these were the best teachers in my schools.
So would you say that if there was a janitor who worked for the school during the school year and also worked at the summer school because he or she wasn't contributing to the education, that the janitor would not be covered?
No, Mr. Waugh, in the case that we've cited in brief, he was a janitor. He's a school custodian. He slipped and fell on his way to clock in at Waipahu High School. He wasn't a contributing member at the time. And ERS acknowledged that, and so did Dr. Lichter, who was then the chairman of the medical board. So he wasn't a member.
Okay, so it's not just these glorified, they're contributing to society's learning. It's, you're saying all employees at summer school, if they are regular ERS members, they would be covered under your interpretation?
Possibly. You know, it depends
Possibly.
On the facts.
Well,
you know, what the Waugh case says, and Kikuta to some extent, is that if you're at the time and place that you're expected to be, and this is seen implicitly on state premises, implicitly on your employer's premises, and you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. This is the infamous work connection test that I read into Kikuta and also into Waugh. Then, and this is also the remedial liberal social perspective that I've advocated that is implicit in both of these cases. Then those considerations come into play. Now, if the hypothetical school custodian was gambling on crystal meth, abusing kids, and then got a service-connected disability injury, whatever you want to call it, that might be different facts.
Mr. McLaren.
Yes.
Service-connected, I think that's the title of the statute that
yes.
governs here. And there's a definition of service, and service is as an employee paid by the state or county.
Yes.
So, if you're a member, and to be a member, you have to have something either equivalent to full-time or something of that nature, and the injury occurs while you're participating in the performance of a duty. It doesn't specifically say as a member, it says while in the actual performance of a duty, and it's a service-connected disability, then the definition clearly puts you in, at least as facially, that if you're, as long as you're an employee paid by the state or county and you're a member and it's in the performance of the duty, you're covered.
Yes, and moreover, Section 79 of Chapter 88, Subsection D, gives ERS the discretion to grant service-connected disability benefits. So if that provision wasn't there, we probably wouldn't be here today.
Could I ask you to clarify that, Mr. McLaren? The question that Justice Pollack asked was focused on the definition of service in HRS 8821. And that definition includes a reference to contribution. If you look at the second to last sentence, talks about service during the period of an unpaid leave of absence or exchange of if the individual is engaged in the performance of a governmental function, or if the unpaid leave of absence is an approved leave of absence for professional improvement. But there's a qualification that says, provided that for the period of the leave of absence or exchange without pay, the individual makes the same contribution to the system. Now, can you help me with that? Does that mean that this definition of service is contemplating in employment by individuals that make contributions to the system?
During the leave of absence. And I made that argument, I believe, either in my reply brief or in the transfer application.
It's limited only to the situation in which the employee's on a leave of absence, and it wouldn't apply to an employee that's engaged in government service where they're not making a contribution?
Yeah, well, you know, we don't make the laws. This is one of the more complicated statutes in HRS, and the oddity, as I've argued in the briefs, is Rosemary, Ms. Stout, received workers' compensation-related retirement benefits for this injury.
But workers' comp isn't dependent on
I understand
service.
What I'm saying is that under 7821, I believe, there's a statutory credit for people who are on workers' comp in state and city employees, county employees, that adds to their retirement credit. And Rosemary took advantage of that. That was a separate provision from Chapter 88. But the irony is that for her work injury, she receives retirement credit, but she doesn't, at least until you decide, have any service-connected disability claim. If she were on leave, on official leave, I cited a statute in my brief saying that she would be entitled, if she got shot on leave, to service-connected disability benefits. So I didn't make the argument that she was on leave going to summer school. I didn't think that was a very intellectually honest thing to say. But the conundrum is there, that under different circumstances under the statute, she would receive benefits. Under other circumstances, including this one, ERS says she doesn't receive benefits.
Mr. McLaren, if you would come back to the hypothetical I asked you before, it was a very long question, two parts. I'll come back to the second part of the question. And what would your position be if instead of working as a summer school teacher at IA High School, this event happened while she was working as a part-time employee at Macy's during the summer? Would it be covered or not covered?
It wouldn't be covered, there's with a caveat. Presumably, she would be working, in the private sector at Macy's, selling something, clothes. That has nothing to do with her state of Hawaii employment. There's no, injury in the scope and course. So if Romel Castro came to Macy's and shot her, and Romel was one of her students at Radford, there still, in my mind, wouldn't be a sufficient work connection back to Radford. This is a very hypothetical, unresolved issue. But it's kind of like the Kikuta case. Was she on her break at Macy's? I don't think so. Was this a personal altercation? Now, if
say it was unrelated at all to her school, the incident.
Wouldn't be covered.
And why not? I'm trying to just understand how the statute is analyzed in your view.
Because it has nothing to do with her primary responsibilities as a school teacher. She's doing something.
Well, what if she had TA'd a temporary assignment into a completely different job during the summer?
That's where it gets into the murky area. If she was going to Macy's to teach, make this English as a second language, or some language, to Macy's employees as a, I don't know, what do you call it, a delegate from Radford High School, from DOE, that might be a bit different.
Right. What if she was, isn't the issue whether or not she was in the actual performance of duty?
Yes, absolutely. She was teaching.
Duty to the state or county?
Yes, she was teaching.
Mr. McLaren, what do you have to say about Mr. Ramil's decision, wherein he stated if all the summer school employees, if the ERS had to pay medical disability retirement benefits to all these people who didn't pay in, it would be unfair to ERS?
Yeah, the parade of horribles. With all due respect to former Justice Ramil, whom I've known personally since 1976, that's absurd.
Well, even one.
We're talking one person.
Even if it's one person.
Okay.
You admitted she did not pay in. You have to take a look at the situation where there may be. How can it be fair to ERS to pay out a lot of money? Because you don't know how many people will be taking advantage of service-connected retirement benefits from summer school. We don't know. How could it be fair to have ERS pay out when the employee has not paid in?
But she was paying in. She was paying in from a regular salary.
So isn't Justice Ramil's example only applicable? In other words, his example doesn't apply unless the person is a member. In other words,
yes.
if you're just a summer school teacher and you're not a member, if you're just sitting, teaching three hours a day or whatever it is, less than 3 months, you're not a member,
yes.
You don't qualify, this issue doesn't come up.
Yes.
This issue comes up only if you're a member,
yes.
And only if you're working for the state and county.
Yes.
So why aren't the teachers, why don't they pay in then? If they're going to be covered by ERS, why aren't they paying in?
I don't know. That's beyond, my kuleana. I imagine it's something between DOE and...
Isn't it per the regs that say that part-time school, basically part-time employees, can't be members of the system?
No, I think it goes more fundamentally. I mean, I looked at the Department of Education statute and went backwards to 1988, because we have those old ones in the office. I was shocked to find that there's almost nothing in the statutes regulating summer school. There's no administrative rules. There's, regulation 5105,
there's some regs in the DOE, but it just basically says that the schools do it. They do their own summer school programs based on separate tuition.
Let me ask you this. The teachers in summer school are paid their salaries out of the tuition paid by students. Is that correct?
That's what Mr. Keola says. I don't have any personal knowledge of that.
Okay, my question was going to be, what if not enough students enroll to make up for the salary? Do you know who would make up for the salaries that are given?
Actually, in those instances, the summer school is canceled, isn't it? Is it not? When the schools don't have enough students, they actually cancel summer school at the DOE.
I don't have any personal knowledge of that.
Mr. McLaren, maybe this can, I'm not sure you know the answer to this, and maybe it can be clarified. But can you pay? Let's assume that Ms. Stout wanted to pay as a summer school teacher. Doesn't 88-42.5 say that if you are a full-time employee, you actually cannot pay additionally? And in other words, the way I read this, and of course I may be reading it wrong, it says that you can't pay for more than one full-time position. If you're trying to pay for a separate position, the statute says you get the money back. So I don't see how she could have paid.
Yes, it's an oxymoron, catch 22.
So there's no way she could have paid.
Yes.
Well, this is similar to Macy's. She can't pay into working at Macy's.
No.
Right? It's
not sure.
She's not allowed to pay while
a summer school teacher. So in other words,
yes.
She was a member, she was paying. So Justice Ramil's whole premise is we're taking away from ERS. We're not taking away from ERS because as a member she had fully paid and she couldn't pay anymore.
I think, you know, in fairness to Justice Vermeil, I think his point, if I may, you know, interpret, he was thinking of the Stout situation where summer school teachers have injuries during summer school and make claims. God forbid if it ever happens, you know, Sandy Hook ever happens to us. It could happen. What would we do then? I don't have the answer. Those teachers who are tenured TOE teachers paying into the system during the summer months would have the same claim that Rosemary has. And they would have to go through the same circumstances.
So your analysis is that membership is required. It's just that membership doesn't necessarily have to be required for each position with the state, as long as there's one position.
As long as the member is actively paying into the system, they're in the system.
And as long as they're working for the state, it doesn't matter whether the payment is for a particular position, as long as it's being paid for at least one.
That's my reading.
I think it's clear, but those substitutes, for example, that might be working part-time, that aren't full-time teachers, that aren't paying into the system, you wouldn't argue that they would be covered for retirement.
Mr. McLaren, and this may not be a fair or apt analogy, and if it's not, please, you know, let me know in your view. But is there at least some sense that the ERS, there's a particular risk that it's accepting in terms of the liability for paying retirement benefits for employees? That risk is somehow captured by the amount that the employee pays for their regular job, and then what's in effect happening here is there's some unanticipated or extra risk which is being imposed on ERS that's not covered or not accounted for by the amounts paid, and that's the potential unfairness that Justice Vermeil was trying to identify. Now, that's sort of an insurance-based analogy. And if you don't think that's apt, explain why it's...
But the difference is that this is not a private pension program. This is a social pension program. This was created for teachers in 1915. And the reason is to promote public education. This is a cost of society in Hawaii. So yes, for regular retirement, maybe even ordinary disability retirement, although that's a little gray, you know, the system takes in X amount of contributions from each employee, and they balance it out. Some employees, my mother was a 30-year employee. She died prematurely before getting any retirement benefits. You got nothing.
My question after following up on this Chief Justice's question is, if ERS has to pay out when they, even if it is a social program, they still have to determine what their risks are in paying out, or their possible liabilities, anticipated liabilities. If they have to cover work-related injuries insofar as retirement benefits, would that mean that other employees, and teachers in particular, who elect not to teach summer school would have to contribute more in order to cover the teachers and the other employees who have part-time work?
You know, I have no idea how the ERS assesses its retirement contributions. And one of the other confusing aspects here is that Rosemary was part of the old system, the contributory system. So they're, you know, the different fiscal analysis, I guess, for that kind of thing. You know, at some point, you know, I hate to borrow the analogy from workers' comp, but, you know, this court has said quite often that, you know, the costs of workers' compensation have to be borne by the employers and spread out through the cost of doing business. To some extent, a public employee retirement system has to do the same thing. There are unforeseen catastrophic instances that no one can predict.
But I'm not so sure that this is unforeseen. The legislature specifically made a decision that said if you are an employee and you are in two positions, more than one full-time position, we don't want you to pay double. We are only going to take contributions for the one position. So this is not a decision that ERS can make based on policy. This is a decision that the legislature said, we don't want to take any more contributions, even if you're working in more than one full-time position.
I agree, but in getting back to Justice Nakayama's question, the system inherently has to accommodate, for lack of a better term, a unplanned or surprise disability claim.
That's true, but the employee does not pay into. This is funded by employees.
Yes, but she was.
And again, workers' comp insurance is not funded by employees. It's not taken out of your paycheck.
It is in the state and county government.
There's a deduction for workers' comp?
No, state and county governments are self-insured.
Oh, okay. But there's not a deduction for my paycheck for workers' comp, but there is for ERS.
No, but they're, in effect, we're all paying for, all taxpayers pay for a state and county workers' comp claims. We also, in effect, indirectly pay for all ERS benefits, through the taxpayers. I can't address the circumstances, what amounts to a quid pro quo. Does, how does the rest of the membership pay for Rosemary Stout? Well, in the health insurance context, with which I'm much more familiar, it's basically spreading the risk throughout the community. That's what it amounts to. And I think in the pension system, that is really what it boils down to. Some people are going to be injured and disabled from working. ERS probably has the statistics for that. A teacher getting shot, very unusual. Teacher not returning to work, very unusual. But that can be spread out. After Rosemary was injured, she was contributing to the ERS system. She contributed to the ERS system through the date of her, until she retired. It came out of her work comp payments, but she was also contributing to her own injury. So if that helps a little bit, that's the reality. That's not.
She worked for 16 more years? How many more years did she work?
She worked sporadically. I don't have her history memorized, but she worked sporadically through the early 90s. When I first was asked to be her, I'm her work comp counsel as well, and Art asked me to be her work comp counsel in 94. And that was the time that she stopped working, and she hasn't worked since. She's tried, she's gone through voc rehab, and
yes.
She just can't do it.
Yeah. Very well. Shall we hear from Mr. Alberano now, and then Mr. McLaren? We run up through your time, but I'll give you some time in rebuttal.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the Court.
Mr. Alberano.
The ERS is a retirement plan, and like all plans, it has rules in order to be fiscally sound. And this Court has noted that what we want and what the people who created the ERS wanted was a sound retirement system. And so we have these rules. Who is a member? Who can be a member? What employments are covered? When are payments made from the plan in order so it can be, and I know this is not what it's been, but a kind of self-sustaining system.
Mr. Alberano, this is the biggest problem I have with your argument, and that is, why was Ms. Stout afforded retirement credit for the time she was a teacher if that time didn't count as being an ERS member?
You mean when she was on workers' compensation?
No. Was it only in workers' compensation that she got retirement credit? For the time that she actually was a teacher during the summer school, any teacher, they did not receive retirement credit? It was only when she was in workers' comp that she got.
Well, this was a result of a lawsuit many, many years ago before my time that teachers did not, principals first of all, and then teachers, they did not like the fact that they were going to only get 9 or 10 months of service credit for each year because they were off during the summer. And so instead, things were passed and there was a lawsuit brought so that they were considered year-round employees, just like all other state employees, that they would be considered year-round and their paychecks would be spread throughout the year so that they would have paid throughout the summer and it wouldn't be excluded from their their entire service credit.
So it didn't have anything to do with her being at the school or being a part-time temporary employee. It was only because of her employment, her regular full-time employment, that she got retirement credit.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
And in fact, this court has held that DOE teachers are not unemployed during the summer, correct? They're considered employed. They can't get unemployment during the summer.
That's right. They can't be considered. But what is also true is that when they're in summer school, their summer school, even for employment security purposes, is considered separate and apart from their regular employment. And there is no dispute, I just want to make it clear in this case, there's no dispute that her appellant Stout's job at IA High School as a summer school teacher was separate from her regular job as a Bradford High School teacher.
Okay, 8879 is entitled Service-Connected Disability Retirement. And it says if an employee is in the actual performance of duty and certification is made by the head of the agency regarding the conditions of service performed by the member resulting the member's disability, right? And service is defined, as Justice Pollack has pointed out, service as an employee paid by the state or county.
Right, and in this particular case, the employer's statement says she was not working at the time of this accident at her regular employment.
Not at her regular employment, but was she not working in the actual performance of duty of service to the state?
In the ERS board's position, she was not, because we construe, the ERS board construes the statute to mean that it's actual performance of duty.
Is this a contractual remedy or a remedial remedy?
Covered by the employee's retirement system.
I'm sorry.
And this is not an employment covered by the employee's retirement system.
Is this a contract or is this a remedial social benefit? I'm just curious.
Well, it is a contract.
If it's a contract, then is it ambiguous as what this means?
Well, I think that you could argue it's ambiguous, but I think if you look at the legislative scheme, it is not ambiguous.
If we were to rule that it is ambiguous, should the ambiguity be construed against the state?
I do not believe
as the drafter?
I do not believe so, because, first of all, I've never heard of that theory being applied to state statutes, that it's a contract to be construed against the state. But second of all, I think the legislative scheme is very clear in this case that retirement, both the funding of retirement benefits and the payment of those benefits are tied to employments covered by the ERS.
Where does it say that? It says service-connected disability retirement. Well, that doesn't say member service-connected disability retirement.
Well, what I'm looking at is the entire legislative scheme of HRS Chapter 88,
like,
which is what this court has said, that we are to interpret the statute, any particular statute or provision of the statute, in light of the general legislative scheme. And this scheme ties both the funding and payment of benefits to covered employments.
I have a question.
The funding is that the funding for the system is paid by employers and employees through contributions which are based on their compensation in covered employments. The funding, the benefits that are paid are also based on the compensation and service they made in covered employments. It is not based on the funding, because they don't get any funding for non-covered employments. It is not based on any service or credits they receive for
Okay, I have a question. Teachers, DOE teachers are often asked, invited to attend seminars or professional development activities, and sometimes organizations, they're asked to be, you know, they're offered to be paid like $100 for that extra day that they attend that conference. So let's say that this teacher was actually on June 30th, 1988, attending such a conference in order to better herself as a teacher. and she was shot. Would that have been in the actual performance of duty?
That's part of the regular performance of her duty. If that's related to her regular job, if it was on leave without professional pay from her regular job.
Well, no, she's getting paid throughout the year.
Well, then it's leave with pay as part of her regular job to attend this conference. As long as
my question is that actual performance of duty?
If it's connected to her regular job.
Okay. Then I think the record in this case does reflect some indication that the DOE, summer school teachers are generally DOE teachers because there's a preference that summer school teachers have teacher certificates, and that most DOE teachers are certificated. Isn't it true that the DOE tries to get full-time DOE teachers to teach at summer school, for especially for classes like English, which students need to pass in order to go to the next level?
Well, that, for quite frankly, I don't believe that's part of the record. There was an argument made in a brief that the DOE wanted to have regular teachers at summer school. Even if assuming that's true, what is undisputed in the record is that the DOE has deliberately taken summer school teaching positions, that category, out of the system.
Let me ask you this question.
They deliberately did not pay contributions.
All right.
It's not just the employee who has to pay contributions. Far greater contributions are due from the employer, the DOE, in this instance.
Okay. So if she had been doing this for free, it would have been okay? Like she had volunteered to teach summer school, she would have been in the actual performance of duty. Is that your position?
I don't believe that is our position. I mean, it's things that are tied to her regular employment.
How is this not tied to her regular employment?
Because the DOE has stated, and it's in Regulation 5105, which was part of the record, that this is considered a completely separate position from her regular employment, and that she cannot apply benefits from her regular employment to her summer school teaching employment. That is part of the record. And that's the only testimony that was in the hearing from Mr. Kaola.
Well, there are issues with respect to whether or not that regulation was properly admitted, since it may be a rule or regulation that affects those outside. It's not an internal thing. But putting that aside, I have a question. Aren't legislators members of the ERS?
Yes, they are.
And so what happens when a legislator is making a speech to the Lions Club as the legislator of that area and receives an honorarium and gets shot?
Well, quite frankly, I don't know. I would have to look at that.
That's not within his or her actual performance of duty?
This is a different case because this is a case not where somebody is doing something that could be incident to their regular employment. This is where somebody is doing something and is injured in the course of doing something which is considered part of an employment that has been deliberately taken out of the ERS system. That is a separate position outside the system. And the reason it is unfair, to follow up on the insurance example, is, well, first of all, service-connected disability retirements are unfunded liabilities of the system.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
Service-connected disability retirements are an unfunded liability of the system because the person is retiring early, before contributions have been made sufficient to pay for their retirement. So who pays for it? It is a cost, which is, like all other unfunded liabilities of the system, spread across all of the employers and employees in the system. And that's fair if it's evenly spread across, meaning that if all the employers and employees pay their contributions based on 100% of the employee's compensation. But in this case, the DOE took this category out. Summer school teachers have been taken out. No contributions were made.
Is it the DOE or the legislature that took it out? It, as Justice Pollack pointed out, hasn't the legislature said that under 88.42.5, an employee, even if you want to pay for another job, you can't?
Well,
you have to choose one full-time position?
Well, I suppose that, you know, the DOE, and I don't know about their inner workings, they could have made summer school teaching part of the regular job and then paid contributions on it.
But the DOE benefited too. The DOE benefited, so they didn't have to pay in too. So both that's correct. So both the legislature has made a determination, and my guess that the reason is You've already paid for a full-time member. How much more do we have to take from you? And they, in other words, if you get a service-connected disability, it's only one disability. It's not two disabilities, it's one.
I would just suggest that it's not.
Excuse me.
Mr. Abraham, please let Justice Pollack continue.
In other words, the maximum that they're going to have to pay doesn't depend on the number of positions.
When I looked at that statute, and it was a statute which I looked in the history, was brought about by the Board of Trustees, not by the legislature.
Legislature pass the statute?
It passed it, but it was a bill which, according to the legislative history, was done at the request of the ERS board, who wanted to clarify some things.
Does that mean we interpret it differently?
And what they interpret, and I'm fairly sure this is the reason for it, is what they don't want is they don't want to have an employee with two, say, 51% jobs or two, quote, full-time jobs putting in for retirement and getting a retirement benefit that is more than their one salary. They're trying to restrict the amount of retirement benefits that a retiree gets to one job, and that's part of keeping the system fiscally sound. It's not because they paid enough. It's to try and restrict the output of the system to just paying for one retirement.
What is the effect on the system if she had been shot during her regular school year as opposed to being shot working as a state employee and as a full-time member if she's shot during the summer?
Well, if she's shot during the regular school year, we have never disputed that she would be entitled to service-connected disability retirement. And as I said, that would be fair because the cost of that has been spread across the system, and the DOE, as well as Appellant Stout, would have paid contributions to cover that. And to draw the analogy to insurance, which has been brought up, a teacher works 10 months, 9 to 10 months, has a certain risk of having a accident at work. If that teacher works an additional 1 to 2 months, they have increased the risk of their being involved in a work-related accident. Normally, in insurance, you would pay an additional premium to cover that.
Can you respond to the argument that I think was in Justice Pollack's question, which is it seems anomalous that the legislature appears to have precluded the employee from doing that, and so the employee is left in essence uncovered, and that raises the possibility that we should interpret the statute as in fact reaching employees as long as they are contributing in some capacity and on duty. You understand the point? I think the point is exactly the gap that you've identified. You have employees who are doing other state jobs that are not part of their usual employment, and what do we make of the fact that it appears the legislature has precluded them from paying in to cover that risk? Is it that the legislature just wanted them uncovered?
I suggest that what the legislature wanted with that particular statute is to try to restrict the liability of the system to paying one retirement benefit to an employee rather than paying a retirement benefit that could perhaps exceed 100% of what would be paid to a normal full-time retiree.
You know, Mr. Alboron, the problem that I'm having is that Justice McKenna asked you about 8879. She asked you specifically about what certain words meant and certain definitions. And you, in your response, you pointed to the legislative scheme. So I'm pointing you to what's part of the legislative scheme that doesn't support your theory. In other words, you want us to walk away from the plain language of the statute. You want us to go to this legislative scheme, and when we look at a sister statute, that if we construe it together, it also is contrary to your position.
Well, I don't believe it's contrary to our position in the sense that it's a statute which seeks to put in a rule to help the system be fiscally sound and fair.
Mr. Abraham, I'm sorry to interrupt, but following up on that concept as to what the legislature intended for employees who are members and employees who are entitled to retirement if they are disabled during service, I had asked Mr. McLaren about the definition of service in the section that refers to, it was a leave of absence for professional improvement, or where the individual is engaged in the performance of a governmental function, but under circumstances in which they aren't making a contribution. So you know the language I'm talking about at the end of service? So
yes.
Why wouldn't that be an indication in terms of considering the purpose of the statute overall? Why wouldn't that be an indication that the legislature is anticipating that where somebody is in the performance of service as a legitimate member, like a full-time teacher, that in a situation like this, it would be analogous because they're performing the service, they're still a full-time teacher, and this is a circumstance in which they're not contributing, but nonetheless, they are engaged in what's discussed here as a governmental function. Why wouldn't this language suggest that the intent is to cover this governmental function of an employee who's engaged in full-time service and, in a sense, performing their duty under 8879?
I think, first, the definition of service is obviously meant to be broad, but it is also tied to the payment of contributions. Somebody who is on leave with pay is paying contributions into the system.
Mm-hmm.
It does say that if you're on leave without pay, you are still considered to have service, provided you're making contributions.
But it also talks about engaged in the performance of a governmental function. I mean, wasn't Ms. Stout engaged in the performance of a governmental function?
She was in a governmental function in a job which has, for all intents and purposes, been excluded from the system. That's quite frankly probably why the DOE creates summer school positions as part-time temporary employees, because it's excluding it from the system so that contributions don't have to be paid, not just for the ERS, but for other things. And it is unfair to impose this additional cost on the other non-DOE employers and non-summer school teachers to pay for funding this risk when it has been deliberately taken out of the system. Now, as far as I don't know if there's any concern about whether or not there was any contributions paid, but I think the record is pretty clear that Helen Stout did not pay contributions out of the summer school employment. The only thing that's confusing about the pay stubs is that since they all come out of the same system, the pay stubs show what is her accrual of retirement contributions throughout the year, and it shows it on both the Radford and IAEA. What is different is that the Radford one shows actual deductions for contributions from her pay stub. The IAEA high school pay stubs don't show any contributions from that amount. So there should be no dispute that this was part-time temporary employment. It was considered and treated by the DOE as part-time temporary employment. No contributions were paid, and that DOE itself considered these to be completely separate and had excluded from the system. And so excluding it, which is perfectly legitimate under the statutes, it is a problem for the ERS board to fund that under service-connected disability retirement, because if the funding and payment of benefits is tied to compensation from covered employment, it only stands to reason that what triggers the payment of a retirement or those retirement benefits should also be tied to covered employment, not tied to something for all intents and purposes was excluded from the system.
Well, Mr. Alvarado, what limits are there on the DOE's ability to define what's excluded from coverage?
Well, one limit is it has to be part-time temporary employment that's excluded. That's really practically, there's only two major exclusions that I'm aware of. One is part-time temporary employments are excluded from the position, from the ERS, so it has to fit within a part-time temporary position. The other thing is if you have an employment that's other than another full-time employment that you have, you can't have it. So for example, UH, they have professors. They don't work all the time. Sometimes they may put them on a committee or some kind of grant-funded committee, and they put them there, and that's a part-time temporary position that is not part of the ERS. They don't pay any contributions for that. That is something that is outside the system. So those are the two major ones that, you know, if you
I'm still not sure I get the second. The first one I understand, part-time temporary employee. So, and that's statutory, correct?
That's allowed by statute and promulgated by an ERS rule.
To exclude?
To exclude. Part-time and temporary. Part-time meaning less than one half of a full-time employee position. Temporary meaning something less than 3 months.
Okay, so, but you're, if I understand your position, DOE could have determined that this summer school employment was part of her ordinary duties, but it did not, and thus it was justified under the statute in, and actually consistent with the statute to define this as part-time temporary employment that was excluded? Is that?
Well, what I'm suggesting, and I don't know all the victims of the Department of Education, but what I'm saying is if they could have made summer school employment part of a person, a teacher's regular employment, and had that compensation for that summer school covered by regular contributions to the system, both by the DOE and by the summer school teacher, then that would be part of a regular employment, and if somebody was injured as part of that regular employment, they would be covered by the ERS. I guess one of the things, just to address the Hawaii Revised Statute 78-25, which is the workers' comp, I call it the workers' comp statute, but what it essentially provides is that...
I'm sorry, which number was that?
I think it's 78-25. It's the credits for employees receiving workers' compensation benefit, and it was cited as a statute which should be considered in peri materia with Hawaii Revised Statute 8879. And, I mean, there to me is nothing in HRS 78-25 that clarifies the meaning of the disability retirement statutes. All 78-25 provides is that if you are on workers' compensation and you are absent from your job because of that, and therefore aren't receiving a check, you can continue to earn ERS service credit by having deductions taken out of your workers' comp in order to pay for service credit. And what that shows is that somebody like Appellant Stout, because workers' compensation is a lot broader than ERS disability retirement, can get workers' compensation, can use that to continue to accrue service credit to the point where if she wasn't eligible already, she could be eligible for an ordinary disability retirement. Require any service connection, could be eligible, in fact, for a regular service retirement if she reaches the proper age and service retirement. And ultimately, in fact, I think this is probably true, is going to apply for permanent disability retirement under the workers' comp as well. So that doesn't tell me much about whether or not Hawaii Revised Statute 80-79 covers a work that is for part-time employment, because as I said, you can get workers' comp for part-time employment. You can get it for temporary employment. You can get it for if you have a second job. There aren't those kinds of restrictions.
But you're not suggesting that she's actually received permanent disability from workers' comp, right?
I'm not suggesting that, but I'm saying that
because I think the record reflects that the state is actually also contesting that.
That I do not know, but I'm just saying the fact that she's on workers' comp and that has been stated in this proceeding, and the fact that she has been earning credits from deduction suggests, if she's to be believed, that she is totally disabled, that would seem to me to lead to some analysis that she would be getting PTD or at least PBD in some respect. And if I have any time to reserve, I will. Thank you.
I'm sorry?
If I have any time to reserve, I will.
You can finish up now. We don't do sir rebuttal, so this okay. Is. If you have anything further to say, this is the... Time to say it, Mr. Alvarado.
All right. I guess the other issues which were raised are whether or not there was a proper foundation for Mr. Hale to testify. And I think that the rules and administrative proceedings, such as the ERS proceeding, are not the same as in the common law trial court, more relaxed standard, and that there was substantial and undisputed evidence to back up the relevant parts of his testimony. And as I said, there is no dispute that summer school is a kind of part-time temporary employment, that is considered by the DOE to be part-time temporary employment. There was no dispute that she did not pay contributions to the ERS from her summer school pay. That was attested to not only by reference to Mr. Kaola's group looking at her pay stubs, but by the ERS benefits manager who testified that they had received no contributions from the DOE or Appellant Stout. DOE Regulation 5105 was something that he brought in and testified to. He was a DOE personnel specialist for 8 years prior to testifying at this hearing, and before that was a summer school director, assistant summer school director, summer school teacher himself, and he is perfectly within his competency to testify that this was a regulation of the DOE personnel department. That regulation specifically says, identify summer school teachers as part-time employees for benefit purposes, Ms. Paul.
And our decision is governed by 8879, which I'm certainly not hearing you distinguishing.
Well, as I said, DOE Regulation 5105, and the ERS is affected by actions which are taken by the employers. The DOE does. The ERS does not tell the DOE or other employers to make or not make jobs part-time. It can only deal with what those departments provided. And in this case, the Regulation 5105 is part of the rules of the department, which says that summer school teachers do not get our part-time employees and that part-time employees do not have ERS benefits. I think also that there would be a problem if we start to enforce stricter competency standards in our ERS proceedings. Most of the members who testify in these proceedings either can't or won't bring their doctors to testify. So all the time we get records which they provide, which they say are medical records they've received. There's no authentication of those. They talk about what their employers said or what their coworkers did. We don't require them to establish competency for that. If we had to go through that kind of a proceeding, it would be very, very hard for our members. as far as Regulation 5105, I do think it is very clear that this is an internal management policy which does not have to be promulgated as a rule. It only concerns what benefits are and aren't available to part-time temporary employees of the DOE. That does not affect members of the public, their rights. It does not affect their procedures any more so than what happened in Rose versus Oba, where the doctor at the hospital complained that the termination of privilege procedures that were applied by the state hospital there were rules, not internal management, and the court said this was, in fact, internal management. I guess in closing, I would just say that I do not believe that the court needs to engage into any kind of remedial liberal construction analysis. The court just simply needs to look at the statutes and apply its regular statutory construction principles, which have been used in the past to deal with ERA statutes, and therefore I'll end there. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Abarano. Mr. McLaren, you have a couple minutes for rebuttal.
Just a couple of points. During summer school, the Department of Education is still responsible for all other forms of employment-related compensation, workers' compensation, TDI, health insurance, etc., although they're self-insured. So the only benefit, fringe benefit, that the summer school teachers apparently do not get is retirement, as a separate retirement contribution. Just as a point of clarification, I was at the summary judgment hearing with Justice Romill and Deputy Attorney General Steve Miyasaka. Mr. Kiola did not testify, That's why I objected to his lack of personal knowledge. He wasn't there. I did have an opportunity to examine him. His lack of personal knowledge goes to his representations about how the school, summer school system worked in 1988. And he clearly said he didn't know.
If we agree with your interpretation of 8879, we don't have to reach that issue, do we?
Yes, I understand that, but I just wanted to clarify that. A couple points I'd like to make that I didn't make previously. The Kikuta and Wa decisions are remedial public employee occupational premises liability rulings for the purpose of establishing an entitlement to service-connected disability retirement for claimants. Those are my words. And what I mean by this is Mr. Moriyama and Mr. Hua were at work, or Mr. Hua was about to get to work. They were on the premises of a state agency. They were injured. And the court used what I consider to be liberal social remedial analysis, particularly with Kikuta. That I see the late Justice Ed Nakamura's hand in Kikuta very heavily. Justice Nakamura was a labor attorney and undoubtedly was the source for the statutory break period mentioned.
How is the brother-in-law coming into the break room and stabbing you and killing you related to the actual performance of duty?
It's not. It's absolutely not.
Other than the fact that he was apparently within the work hours.
It's not. And also, as I pointed out in my brief, under the workers' comp statute, an accidental injury to an employee as the result of the employee's employment is compensable. But in this circumstance, it's arguable that Mr. Moriyama and his brother-in-law's assault had nothing to do with his work as a tax examiner. So it could conceivably be, could have been excluded. Now, we don't know if a work comp case was filed or not, but the court, this court, in my view, bent over backwards to accommodate the Kikuta family, the survivors of Mr. Moriyama. And that was a good thing. That was what this court is for.
Isn't part of that because we recognize specifically that the board is a trustee owing a fiduciary duty to minister the ERS for the benefit of the members of its system?
Yes.
We've said that more than once.
Yes. And there are social and remedial purposes to this particular kind of case. Into the Kikuta case and the Wong case that give enhanced fiduciary duties.
Mr. McLaren, I do need to ask you to, if you have any important points, hit them quickly because we're on a tight schedule this morning. Thank you.
The Supreme Court in Kikuta and the Intermediate Court of Appeals in Wong tacitly presumed an occupational or work connection basis for both of those injuries to recognize ERS service-connected disability retirement eligibility. That's not the same as the so-called work comp presumption, but it is very clear what this court and the ICA did in those cases. They did presume a work activity for the humanitarian purposes of service-connected disability. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. McLaren, Mr. Alvarano. The court will take this matter under advisement.